Welcome to Giant Cocktails, a podcast where two lifelong fans talk about the San Francisco Giants while drinking homemade cocktails. Now, here are your hosts, Ben and Matthew Henry.
Welcome back to Giant Cocktails. I am your host, Ben Henry, alongside my brother, the nonplussed Matthew Henry. How you doing, Matthew?
I don't even know how I'm doing.
Ten games into the season,
and I don't even know how to, like if I didn't have a podcast to express my feelings, it would be okay, but I do, and I don't know what to say, and this is going to be a difficult show for me. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
Right. Typical Gen Xer male. Just, you know, if you didn't have to talk to other people, then you would never have to talk about or think about your feelings.
Correct.
But because you have a podcast, whose half of your listeners are, well, half of our listeners are practically Gen Z, Matthew. I don't know if you know this, but I've got a secret pollster out there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Anyway, you're nonplussed. You're nonplussed. I have a question for you, and then I have another question for you. So my first question for you is, because I have a feeling that this is why you're nonplussed. Matthew, are the Giants good, or are the Giants bad?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought. We're going to talk about it.
This is the cause of my angst, Ben.
I want them
to be good, but there's lots of evidence to point in the other direction. And yet we had such a great offseason that I feel like the team is almost good, could be good, is good. I don't know. I'm nonplussed.
You subtract one horrible sweep at the hand of our bitter, bitter rivals. You know, if you just forget about that, like, you know, and what Giants fan can't forget about getting swept by the Dodgers? I mean, nobody cares about that, right? It's a minor thing. If you just forget about that, Matthew, they have a winning record.
I like it. I like the way you're thinking. So they're a good team.
All right.
That's why I'm going with that.
All right. Good. I have a lot of evidence to the contrary.
Oh, no.
So, you know, as is my job, we're going to be talking about some of those things today, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I have a question for you, Matthew.
Okay.
This is a little bit related to the Giants, you know. Do you prefer things that are new and shiny? Think of them like, you know, the Jorge Soler kind of gadget. Or do you like things that are tried and true? You know, like Wilmer Flores. What's your preference?
Part of me, I don't like to take risks. So the tried and true is important to me.
Yeah.
But I really do like shiny new things.
I mean,
I don't always splurge on the shiny new things. So when I do, I get really excited about it.
Right.
Kind of like the Giants.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what, Matthew? I am definitely a guy who likes the new and shiny. And I don't like to take risks either, but I like to do research so that I mitigate risks and then I get the best new shiny thing. But I will say this, Wilmer needs to be in the lineup. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, today is Sunday, April 7th, as we record this podcast. Your San Francisco Giants have gone 4-6 for their last 10 games. But they did eke out a win against the San Diego Padres, taking 2 out of 3 in their home opening series. Winning opening day in typical opening day fashion, right? Walk-off win.
Yep.
Right? It's practically guaranteed these days. And then lost game 2, obviously. Of course. You know why they lost that game, Matt?
Because we were there. Yes, that's why.
That's right. We apologize. It's our fault. The Giants lost on Saturday because we went to that game. And we're gonna talk about that. We're definitely going to be talking about that because Matthew and I, we went there. We did the research. You know, Farhan, little Farhan, you know, the little Farhan that won the 200-meter race. I'm not talking about the little Farhan that was playing with rockets that broke Mrs. Smith's window. He did enough, Matthew, right? He did enough during the offseason to make an exciting roster that made me feel like I should go early, right? And then they also tricked me, right? I mean, they tricked me. They tricked me into going because they brought out Camilo Doval's bobblehead. And you know what, Matthew? It occurs to me, they know that Camilo is my favorite player. They know it because I've said it on this show many times. And they're like, let's just drop his bobblehead on game two. Now I guess he's got to go. And they were right. I fell for it. I totally fell for it.
You did.
I did. So I got my Camilo bobblehead yesterday. We're going to talk all about the fan experience. What's good? What's not? Have they done enough to make it fun there beyond the product that they put on the field? And is it enough? Is it enough to lure fans back? Especially if the product on the field doesn't do its part. And then we're going to really dig in to the Giants offense because obviously. Right? I mean, this team, you know,
pitching and defense wins championships.
Pitching and defense wins championships, but only if you score at least one run. You know, we don't need a lot of offense, but we need some.
Okay, that's the rub. I get it. I get it.
Right. And I don't think we can rely on every game going the way today's game went, because the Padres are not going to be there for them to Padre for us. You know what I mean, Matthew?
I do.
Like it's if we play this way against everybody else, I don't think we're going to go 3-2-1 every series. So we're going to dig deep into the offense. And that is what we will be talking about today. But before we get into all of that, Matthew, it's time for the trivia question.
So I have been, I don't know, obsessed is the right word, but I've been very interested in this whole stolen base thing. I think it's because, at some point it was planted in the seed that the Giants were going to get younger and more athletic. And in my mind.
Oh, at some point?
Yeah.
Three times in the last 3 years, Matthew.
Exactly. And in my mind, that means that equates to more speed on the base pass, more stolen bases. And then they come in with these new rule changes that every other team in the majors has taken advantage of. And I thought for sure that the Giants would steal more bases, especially once Jung Hoo Lee became part of the lineup. Folks, that has not happened. The Giants are the only team in the major leagues without a stolen base.
That's right.
And so I started looking and I thought, well, does it equate to success? Do you have to steal a lot of bases to be successful? So I went back and looked at our World Series years, and it was a mixed bag. But the trivia question is born out of that curiosity. So today's question is, in 2012, the Giants were third in the National League in stolen bases with 118. Five players had double digits in steals. Name them.
What?
That's right.
What?
Name all five, because I'm particularly interested in the fifth one. I think it's very interesting. But
you can now. Okay. Happy, Sneezy, Larry, Schmo, Wren, and
Buster Posey.
yeah, sure. I guess I should. Oh, what year was this we're talking about?
2012.
Brandon Crawford.
All right.
There you go. Those are my five.
All right. We'll see how right or wrong Ben is at the end of the episode.
Folks, you get 1 point for every name that you get right.
That's right.
I
don't really expect everyone to be off the top of the head to know the top five, but I thought it was an interesting answer. So that's what you're going to get at the end of this episode.
All right.
Enough with the banter. Let's talk cocktails.
Cocktails.
What are you drinking, Ben?
Thank you for asking, Bob. That's very kind of you. Today, Bob, I am drinking a cocktail that my brother named Ben's Buck. And what's in a Ben's Buck? Well, it's just a whiskey buck, folks. It's got 2 ounces of rye whiskey. I am doing overproof, a bottled in bond, 100-proof rye whiskey. And instead of just putting in regular old ginger
liqueur syrup,
ginger ale, and ginger,
oh, ginger beer.
Ginger beer. Thank you. I might have had some before the show started. It's not in the, because I didn't use ginger beer, Matthew. That's what's in a gin buck. A whiskey buck is like, you know, it's like, yeah, you just, what do they call them? The kids call them, they put them in the copper and they
the
call
mules.
It
a, they called a mule.
Yeah, a mule. Right. So that's not this. What I did is I made my own ginger syrup. So I made simple syrup, and I just steeped slices of fresh ginger in there and let it simmer for about a couple of minutes. And then I just let it cool and steep for about 15 minutes after that. And that's how I made my ginger syrup. So there is 3/4 ounce of that. And then I combined those in a glass with no ice, and I stirred them well to combine. And then I added the ice, and then I topped that with 3 to 4 ounces of club soda. And then I used my bar spoon to do a gentle single stir. So I just put my spoon in, bowl side out, and then I just pull that up through the glass to just give it a nice little mix without destroying my bubbles. And that's how you make a Ben's Buck. Man, oh. It's going to be a long show.
It is. It was a high-proof whiskey, wasn't it?
That's right. It is. Anyway, that's what I'm drinking, Bob. Please, save me.
That's a tasty cocktail.
And a strong one, apparently.
Indeed.
What are you drinking, Matthew?
Bob, it is my mission in life to make sure everybody knows how to make a proper daiquiri. Okay? First of all, a daiquiri is not a blended drink. Okay, so when you tell somebody that you like a daiquiri and they say, oh, we don't do blended drinks here, that's when you know that you should probably order something else. But if you would like to make one, here's what I'm doing today. I'm doing a cinnamon daiquiri. What's in it? It has 2 ounces of white rum, 3/4 ounces of cinnamon syrup, and 3/4 ounces of lime juice. That's it. You put them all into a cocktail shaker with ice, give it a good shake for 10 to 12 seconds, double strain it into a coupe glass, garnish it with a lime wheel, and you've got a nice, refreshing, sweet and tart drink that is good any time of year. So that's what I'm drinking, Bob, the cinnamon daiquiri.
That's a tasty cocktail.
It really is. And, you know, you could do lots of variations with the syrup, but it's still a daiquiri. All right, still daiquiri. So, but talk about variations, Ben.
Yes,
we ordered the new cocktail at Oracle Park on Saturday,
that's right,
and we got
right.
some variations of that drink, didn't we?
We did. We did get some variations. Yeah, so I thought the first thing that we could talk about today, Matthew, is the fan experience. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you and I went to opening night, the second game of the season, Camilo Doval's bobblehead night, and we got there really early so that we could secure our bobbleheads. You made a faux pas.
I did. I panicked. Our plan was, folks, was to meet inside, and we were both going to get our Camilo bobbleheads and go in. I got there at 4:10, 4:15.
Yeah.
And there were lines like down past, you know, all the statues. Like I was like, oh my gosh. And so then I thought, I'll go through the team store.
And it
worked. It was great. I went right through, except they weren't giving out bobbleheads at the
team store. Why you went right through. That's why the line was super short. They don't give away it turns out they don't give away the giveaway if you enter through the dugout store. Which is between the main gate and the Lefty O'Doul gate.
Yeah, I mean, so I didn't get my Camilo.
You didn't get your Camilo bobblehead. I, on the other hand, did get my Camilo bobblehead. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later because there were some things that I wanted to point out if you're a fan that you might need to know and want to know. Because there were some people that were very disappointed and frustrated by the lines. And so hopefully the Giants will fix some of these things because they've figured it out because they've added some new features to getting in. And that caused a bunch of confusion and put some people in a position where they felt like they weren't going to get a bobblehead, even though I'm pretty sure they did. All right, yeah, so we went to the baseball game. So after we got in, we had like 2 hours to explore and walk around the park and do all kinds of, you know, see what there was to see, look for all of the new food items, and really just kind of take in the general vibe of the fans. And yeah, I guess, I mean, well, where should we start? I don't know why I put this down here. I feel like we should talk about the cocktails first, right? Because this is Giant Cocktails. Yes. So I put this third on the list, but I'm going to move this up because we're going to talk about the cocktails. So one of the things that I actually think that the Giants have been doing reasonably well the last couple of seasons is they have been adding cocktails as a adult beverage option at many locations throughout the ballpark. I know of at least 4 bar locations where you can get bartender made cocktails. And that is, there is a location, the Jim Beam Bar behind home plate. And then I don't know the name of it, Matthew. I think it was named after a beer stand name. The one where we got ours.
I think it was named after the one of the spirits, but
right. It's right above the Lefty O'Doul entrance. So on the main level, right above the entrance there. So those were the 2 bartenders. And then we also had club level tickets. So there's the 2 bars that are, one that is on the
right outside section 211 on the first base side.
Correct.
And there's one all the way down at the end of the left field corner there.
Right, right. And one of those is the Bullet Bar, and the other one is the Jose Cuervo Bar. And I will say, like, those places, you know, they're serving pretty much any kind of cocktail, simple cocktail that you want, but they were featuring the Orange Splash. And I started out, once I got my bobblehead, I was in there and I went straight to the Jim Beam place because that was the first one I walked by, and I saw that they had the souvenir cups there. So I said, oh, they must be making the Orange Splash. And I asked for that. I ordered that one by name, and the bartender told me that I could get any cocktail as long as I paid in that glass, cup. It's a plastic cup. As long as I paid, I think it was $2.99, might have been $3.99. Let's say it was $3.99, so you don't get mad at me because I said it was cheaper than it actually is. And you could get any cocktail in that. But if you order the Orange Splash, it comes included. So I ordered the Orange Splash. And the bartender made me a screwdriver. I saw her do it. I just watched her. She made me a screwdriver.
So just vodka and orange juice? That's how she put in it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, vodka and orange juice. And I thought about saying something, but I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'll just go ahead and see how this is. And it tasted like a screwdriver. But then later, once we met up, we went to the bar above the Lefty O'Doul gate. And that gentleman that was working there, he definitely knew how to make the Orange Splash. And I think he gave us a nice, generous pour.
He did.
Because we were talking a lot of game about cocktails. And he also did not put in the lemon lime soda,
which I think was a good call.
I don't know if he forgot or if he was just like, I'm just going to do these guys a favor and not do that, because it was a good call.
Yes.
You know, so like the Orange Splash was very different than the Orange Splash that I featured on the show, because A, it didn't have the lemon lime soda in it, but it did have the, he added a lime, I don't know, it was like a lime syrup of some sort. Now it came out of a plastic bottle, so you know, but whatever.
He's
making cocktails at a ballpark. You gotta be reasonable about where you are. So the bartenders were a mixed bag. It was also kind of hard to find this cocktail. They weren't really featuring it anywhere. Like, it was weird to me that they kind of presented it there with their whole thing of, like, this is a new thing we're doing. And then it was just sort of like, it wasn't featured anywhere. Nobody was talking about it. You didn't see it being advertised anywhere. It was just sort of like this mystery cocktail that you had to request. So,
folks, we might have been the only ones in the ballpark that were excited about this.
We might have been because, like, you know, yeah. So anyway, so that's the cocktail stuff. But then we had food, Matthew.
Yeah. And I got to say, I judge my food based on the garlic fries.
Right.
And the last time I had garlic fries at Oracle, they were a hard, rubbery, cold mess.
Yeah.
And it was, they were unedible. I couldn't even eat them. And
you can't order them after like the fourth inning because they're just downright awful.
Well, the thing was, I've ordered the ones that I got at the before the game started, and they were still sitting out like in a warmer bin. I don't know. Anyway, right. Folks, this time around, they were much better. They were good. In fact, it was what garlic fries at the park should be, and I was happy. I was satisfied. Yeah.
It seemed to me like they had heard that feedback, and it looked like what they're trying to do now is to make sure that the fries are not floppy, right? That they are crisp. And I think this is probably where some people feel like they were rock hard, because I can see how if these fries maybe sit in a warmer too long would dry out and get hard. But if you get these fresh, and hopefully they work out all the kinks, I think these are better, right? Like, they were crispy. They were warm. I mean, they felt like new, fresh fries, right?
Yeah.
And they weren't a soggy, soppy, sad mess. So, and then I had the as we were calling it, the fuck you chicken.
Oh man, now I gotta beat that up. All right. Folks, it's the fuku chicken.
It's pronounced fuku. Yeah, we didn't know. Yeah, we knew. I only yelled it loudly in the ballpark once. Say this.
And only a couple people turned their head.
Yeah, and one of them was a mother with two small children. So.
Yeah, fair.
And they weren't that small.
It was not the first time they'd heard that word.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Probably from their mother. You, what the fuck you doing? You're grounded. Anyway, they were really good.
So were they, yeah. So Mark on Twitter wanted to know about the chicken strips and the fries. So the waffle fries that it came with. I noticed you didn't finish those.
That was a personal choice. Like, I thought they were fine. They were fine as far as waffle fries go. I'm not a big waffle fry kind of fan. Like, they were okay. So the waffle fries were soft, because they were larger in size. They look like, I mean, honestly, they look like they were cooked there, right? Cut and cooked there, which I don't believe. But they were quite good. They were quite good for waffle fries. But these were not breaded or treated in any way. These were like potatoes that were cut in a waffle shape and then maybe fried in a light oil and then salted. A lot of times you get waffle fries that have sort of crispiness to them.
They're double fried kind of thing? Yeah,
yeah, okay. This was not that. I thought they were fine. You know, I definitely would need like a ketchup or some sort of sauce with them. I chose not to finish them, but not because they weren't good. But the chicken was quite good. Like super, I hate this word, moist. moist. God, I hate that word so much. I get stuck in this loop and then I just keep saying it over and over again.
Next week, our listeners drop by half.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, he said the M word.
You can say "fuck you" as much as you want, but don't say "nice."
That's right. So yes, drop F bombs all you want, but don't say the M word. Well, folks, they were very M word. Yeah, I thought they were really good. Now they were kind of they didn't like rock my socks, you know, they didn't like blow me away. But I thought they were the best chicken tenders I have ever had at any ballpark. That's for sure. And we already gave a shout out to Pavlovich on on Instagram or Twitter or wherever it was.
It was Twitter, and he responded. Yeah, he was happy to take take credit for the new.
Well, he's been taking credit. Like, he's taken victory laps around how he advocated for getting the larger chicken tenders. And I will say this though, the Fuku chicken line is a different thing than the standard chicken tenders. So they're now serving like two competing chicken tenders. And I did see the regular ballpark ones, and those look gigantic. Those look like there's no way Pavlovich is going to call these too small size. Like, mine were large, but then I saw the regular ones that just come from the regular lines, and they were gigantic. I think you only get like two because they were just so huge. There was like no way they could give you more than two because you wouldn't have room in on the little, you know, tray. But anyway, you know, the food overall seemed better. Like, and not only was the food better, but the crowd seemed more attentive and into it. Right? I mean, it just seemed bigger and more excited to be there.
Certainly. And we didn't, I mean, it's been a while since we've been in a stadium with like that sold out, you know, and certainly had that atmosphere, that vibe. And you had the in-between innings, they were, you know, they got shooting t-shirts into the stands and hyping people up and, you know, DJing out in the center field. So there was a vibe. It was fun.
That's right. And they had you know how Amy G used to be working the crowd, and then they fired her or whatever. They hired the two kids from the Sunday pregame. Is it Sunday or Saturday? What did they?
It was Sunday. It was the Sunday game.
The Sunday game. They used to have Cole Kuiper and friends. Right. It was like Cole Kuiper and friends. I know that's not the name of it, but that's how I thought of it. I guess they took two of them and they just adiosed them. They gave them their pink slips. They gave them their walking papers. They kindly asked them to not return. And lo and behold, those two that suddenly they were hired as they're the hype people now at the Giants game. So I don't know their names, and I'm Ben, and I'm a horrible person, so I can't be bothered to go figure it out. But hey, they were working the crowd and doing that whole crowd thing, and I thought they were doing a great job. And so it's nice to see that like the Giants like kind of like taking somebody in who had been in like a sort of satellite thing. And kind of bringing them back into the fold. And it felt like somebody on the marketing or PR team was like, maybe this is a way that we can get like back like a 1% of the damage that we did, and probably not even that much when we let Ronnell go. See, we're not all horrible people, just some of us.
And we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Yes. And so, so they were there and they were working the crowd and doing all that thing. So, overall... I thought there were a lot of good things, and I feel like that they are genuinely trying to make the team, the product, better, right? Because we've been complaining about this a lot, but it hasn't just been us. You know, I've heard Ben Kaspic talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
I've even heard, like, you know, they've talked about it on Giants Talk. Yeah. Which, if they're talking about it on Giants Talk, that's pretty close to that's basically the company podcast, right? And when the company podcast is talking about how boring your product is, that's not a good sign. So I will say that they are trying to make the product better. Will everybody think it's better? Will everybody like the new garlic fries? No. But I will say this, they are trying. And they're not doing the same old, same old. And you know what, Matthew? I forgot. Did they play "Don't Stop Believin'" going into the bottom of the ninth?
No, I don't. I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. So there you go, Ben Kaspic. They didn't play "Don't Stop Believin'" when they were losing going into the bottom of the ninth. So yeah, but it wasn't all good.
Yeah, so right. I scooted right in through the team store because I'm a veteran and just decided to kind of cut through the lines. Right. You, though, really wanted your Camilo bobblehead.
Bobblehead, yes.
So much so that you gave them your facial ID.
Yeah.
They have your face now forever, like in a vault.
Yeah, I did a thing that I don't normally like to do. So Major League Baseball has started this thing where they do facial recognition, so you don't even have to get your phone out or show your ticket or anything like that. You just walk through, and the camera says, you're good. and then they, well, in this case, they give you your bobblehead and you walk in. I had signed up for this because I felt like this might make it easier for me to get my Camilo bobblehead. And I don't normally like to give this whole facial recognition thing, but I'm also not an idiot. I know that, like, there's cameras everywhere that have captured my face and saved it in a database. If you've walked out in public, folks, this has happened to you. So basically, this has happened to you. But I willingly let them do this because I figured the San Francisco Giants probably already have my picture up on the wall inside of the corporate offices.
It's on the dartboard.
That's right. There's a dartboard of my face. So I figured they already know what I look like. So I signed up for this thing and thinking that it might get me in. And I'm a smart guy and I know that, you know, oh gosh. Okay. Wow. I just insulted a lot of people by calling myself smart.
As opposed to the others that weren't smart, Ben?
Yeah, I didn't mean smart. I'm inexperienced. I'm an experienced guy who's been through this before, and I know how these things work, and I knew that there was going to be a special place where I had to walk through. But I also knew that tons of people would be lining up in a line, so I went and I found the special entrance for my facial recognition line. But the line was so long that it wasn't clear that it was one of the facial recognition lines instead of a normal line because of these two separate lines. And there were all of these people in my line who hadn't signed up for this service. And so when they got up to near the front of the line, a person was telling them, like, no, you can't go in because you didn't sign up for this thing. And so now they thought they were, like, close to the front, and it turned out, no, not only are you not at the front, you're not in line at all. And now you're not going to get your Camilo bobblehead. So your day is ruined. Which is not true, because there was enough. If you got there, I think, 30, you know, I don't know, an hour before the game, you probably still got one. But maybe not. But anyway, the lines were not properly, you know, there was still a lot of kinks and things. And it wasn't the greatest setup for that particular scenario, to have all of these special lines where you need to be in one and not the other. And I'm sure this was probably true with Clear and all of these other things. But they need to do a better job of labeling those things on giveaway days. They didn't have it right today, but I think this is the first time they had this kind of special gate. So I'll cut them a little bit of slack, but they didn't have that right. So if you're going to a special giveaway in the future, be aware that there are special lines that you may not be able to stand in. So just be careful you don't accidentally stand in one of those things.
Or do what Ben did and sign up for the facial recognition thing.
Give away your identity.
And those are the shorter lines, you know. So if you really want that Patrick Bailey bobblehead, like we all do, then, you know, the facial recognition might be the way to go.
That's right. And big tech already knows what you look like. Like, I don't know why you're trying to pretend that they don't. You've taken all these selfies of yourself and posted them on social media. They know. But you're also just walking around in public. They know that too. They got you. Anyway, moving on.
So, speaking of bobbleheads.
Yeah.
So bobbleheads are used as a tool to get people to come to a game. They are a very popular incentive that people actually target those days because they collect, or that maybe it's their favorite player like yourself, and they want that particular item. It's telling that they did one on the second home game of the season, don't you think?
It's insane. It's insane to me. Usually opening the second game of the season or the first night game of the season is enough promotion in and of itself to get people to go to the game.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me that they had a bobblehead on game two. This to me says that they really, really, really wanted a big crowd. They let opening day speak for itself, but then boom, game two is a bobblehead of one of their most popular players. Right. And the other thing I've noticed is that, and yeah, and they have two bobbleheads. Like, bobbleheads are the big giveaways. And I think they're giving away four or five bobbleheads this year, which, first of all, is kind of a lot. That we have a Patrick Bailey one coming. We have a Lamont Wade Jr. one coming. And then there's also a Willie Mays one. And then I think the core four thing is going to be, but it's going to be some sort of giveaway, maybe. I'm not sure. And then, so those are the bobbleheads. They're also doing other giveaways. They're giving away a Logan Webb, like, basketball jersey. They're giving away a Tiki mug giveaway that Matthew and I are definitely going to that game.
That's right.
And, but what I noticed about all of their big giveaways is that they're all front-loaded to, like, the first half of the year. So it really feels to me like the Giants know that they have a fan experience problem. They know that they have an attendance problem, and they know that they have had a boring baseball product. So what feels to me like they're doing is they're front loading all of these giveaways into the first half of the season to bring fans out, to get them to experience this new experience and this new team, and then have the team and their performance bring people back in the second half of the season. So they're really, really trying hard to fix a lot of the problems that they've caused in the past by putting a bad product out on the field and by sort of neglecting the fan experience product. So all in all, I think they're finally starting to do the things that they need to do. The problem with this is that the leadership kind of keeps shooting themselves in the foot.
What do you mean, Ben? I mean, like firing the longtime public address announcer?
Right. Rennell?
Yes, exactly. Firing Rennell? There are plenty of examples, including the latest. So, Ben, when you donate your money in exchange for something,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a plaque or right. a tile or a brick that will be in perpetuity, you'll be able to go and visit your brick anytime you go to the ballpark. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
It's a wonderful thing, right? What's wonderful about it is that you know it's going to be there for a very long time, right? It is a commemorative thing that helps you show your love and appreciation for baseball and in this particular organization, but also how that helped you bring you and your loved ones together. It is an extremely meaningful thing to do. And it's really cool that a lot of organizations do this, like the San Francisco Giants. Like, you know, they did this when the park opened, and they did this when they made the Willie McCovey statue out across McCovey Cove. They let people create these tiles with tributes to their family members or to themselves or their families. And it was really, really special. And, you know, Disney does this.
Load of crap. Because the Giants were just like, we're not going to, I know y'all paid for those tiles, but we're going to slap them up on a Panasonic TV and let you guys go and look at
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, when the McCovey statue was made across the McCovey Cove and next to that little ballpark they had there, a lot of people had commemorative plaques put down in the ground. With inscriptions to family members and to, you know, or just their names in there to celebrate their love for the Giants. And you know, I think when they had those put down, they thought they were going to be there for a pretty long time. But, you know, when they decided to sell all that land and develop buildings there and, you know, I mean, and let, you know, the Visa building go in, they had to redesign that area and they had to move, change how the McCovey statue was positioned and change that park. And so they had to pull up all of those tiles. And what they originally were going to do was they were going to destroy the tiles and then replace them with a digital display. Basically, this was going to be a computer screen where you could type in to see people who had commemorated, who put the plaques up originally. And let's face it, folks, the screen was probably going to be broken most of the time and nobody would ever use it. And it was extremely disrespectful and just sort of a backhanded treatment of all of these people who'd paid money to have these tributes put out there. And they came out and it was just... I couldn't believe that they were doing it, Matthew. Like, I couldn't believe that they were doing this. Like, because, like, it's just so unempathetic, right? Here's an organization that understands, okay, look, we have a bad product. We have to bring people back to the park. The analytics are telling us to do all of these things, and we have to make all of these changes. But at the same time, the same organization is making decisions like that, which tells me the changes that they're doing for the fans are just driven off of analytics. Like, they have almost no empathy for human beings who love their team so much, they're going to give them money to put their name somewhere close to it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how many corporations have that?
Yeah. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me that they could be so out of touch and so insensitive. And
it's almost inhuman.
Yeah. it's robotic. It's whatever. It's just, yeah. And I know, I work for a nonprofit, and we actually do things similar when we're doing, trying to build things and all that. We, have tiles and all that. And I've actually had to be in a similar situation where we were making a renovation, and we had to decide what to do with them. And you know what we did? We took them all down and we put them all back up because that's the right thing to do. And it's not hard. It's not a hard decision to make when you know that people did that for you out of the goodness of their hearts. You know, and instead, these people who are running the Giants now just don't get it, and they don't understand. And that's not the way the Giants used to be. And so that's a little bit hard to take now because it feels like the fans are no longer important. And we're not the focus of this team anymore. And they don't really care of the image or what the fans, how the fans react. Fire Rennell. Get rid of some tiles. They don't care. And that's it's hard to swallow.
Right. Well, but that's because they're capitalists, and those decisions are usually numerically driven. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So they say, they save $25,000.
Right. Right. But they forget that their business is the entertainment business, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, this is the sort of thing, like I said, Disney does this sort of stuff, right? And I mean, Disney doesn't tear the tiles down.
No. Right? You're in the people business, Giants. You're in the people business.
Right.
And so start trading. You're not a baseball team. Your product, your end result is to make people happy and want to keep coming back. And you make decisions like this, and they seem like you get that.
Right. Treat people like they're humans, just like you. Right. Imagine when you give all of your money to a hospital so they can put your name on a building, how upset you would be if that hospital just said, you know what? It's been 10 years. We're just going to tear this building down and not rename it your name. You would be annoyed. I know you would. Your ego would be bruised. Like, think of it that way. You're not tearing down a tile. You're tearing down a whole wing of a hospital that's named after somebody. I don't know. But anyway, Matthew, was the fan experience. Yeah. Yes.
Yep. I just want to quickly, before we segue into the next thing, Ben, before we met up, he bought me a hat. And he comes up to me and he shows me this hat. And frankly, it's a little dirty.
It wasn't a little dirty. It was a lot dirty.
Yeah. It's got like splatters on it. To the point where I thought maybe it was on purpose. Like, I thought, is this what the kids are wearing these days? You know,
like bird poop. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't really sure what it was. It was white splotches all over it. Turns out it was a game used spring training hat by none other than Rule 5 draftee Blake Sable. And so I just wanted to say thank you to Ben for this wonderful hat. I'm torn between cleaning it and just leaving it is. I think I'm going to leave it the way it is. I'll forever have to explain that it's not bird poop on my hat.
Don't clean it. I bought it because it was dirty.
You bought it because it was Rule 5 draftee Blake
Sable. I did buy it because it was Rule 5 draftee Blake Sable. I am wearing Austin Slater's hat because it fits.
It turns out that Blake Sable and Austin Slater have the same hat size.
That's right. They have the same hat size and the same hat size as me.
I haven't checked in to see how Blake Sable is doing offensively in AAA, but I do know that the entire Giants team better be looking over their shoulder into AAA at this time, because, Ben, we ain't hitting.
Oh, do we have to talk about baseball now?
Yeah, I think we do, because
I was trying to go the whole episode without talking about the how the team is playing, Matthew, because
I think we got to get one segment in about baseball. All right. And unfortunately, it's a little deep dive into how poorly the Giants are hitting. And as you said at the beginning, we don't need a lot of runs because this team is definitely built on pitching and defense now.
That's right.
But we do need some runs. And you and I sat through an entire game where not run was scored by the Giants, and it wasn't even close.
No.
There wasn't anything to get excited about from the Giants' perspective offensively.
Saturday's game was so sad. It was like, I mean, first of all, Keaton Wynn did pitch well, except for the first inning. And really, he should have gotten out of the inning with a 1-2-3 inning, but Jung-Hoo Lee didn't see the ball. That was hit
very
first
pitch
of the game.
Folks, if you were like late to the game or late to turning it on, very first pitch was a shallow fly ball to center field, a high fly ball to center field, right into the sun, because the sun looks right out at center field at 6.05 p.m. And Jung-Hoo Lee couldn't see it, and it landed about 20 feet in front of him.
That's right.
And then they ended up loading the bases with two outs, and that's when the grand slam was hit. So if there had been one, if he had gotten that out, there's a good argument to say that they get out of that inning without any runs allowed.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But on the other hand, the Giants didn't score any runs in nine innings.
Yeah, so it could have been one run, and it didn't
really
matter.
Yeah, it really didn't matter. It really didn't matter, right? Like, I mean, I will say that Keaton Wynn had a bad result, and you never, you know, I mean, he had a grand slam, and he had three hits and an inning hit off of him, but I don't think that they didn't get another hit off of him in the game. And it was really a well-pitched game by him other than that one, you know, one inning. But it was, you know, I kept saying this during the game to you, Matthew. It felt like four runs was a million.
Oh, it did. Like there was, I mean, just, and then the park, even though there was some excitement as the game kind of, they did a good job, but it just felt like everyone kind of just went, ah, you know, after
we
that grand
knew.
Slam.
We just yeah. knew. We yeah. knew. And what really hurt was it was just like, it was this King kid, you know, who all he was doing was throwing a first ball fastball strike, which the Giants never swung at. And then he was throwing his changeup. And there was this beautiful moment where Tom Murphy was batting, Matthew, where he got that first ball fastball strike. And then I said, I think I yelled it out loud, he's going to throw the changeup and you're going to swing and miss. And Tom Murphy did. He did. And Murphy did.
Yeah.
And then he did it again. And the thing that was so infuriating to me was, Matthew, was like, how does a 48-year-old man sitting in his seat know that? And you don't, as a professional baseball player. Like, it was, and it was like that at bat after at bat.
Yeah, it was to the point where you and I were talking after the game that it almost felt like the Padres knew that the Giants were not going to swing at the first pitch.
Right.
And so King was getting ahead in pretty much every count. And or every at bat he was getting ahead in the count. And so I feel like it felt like we had a lot more information about the coaching staff when Gabe Kapler was the manager. I mean, you know, we all knew kind of what everyone's roles were, and we heard stories about how they were coming at it with game plans and all that. And we haven't heard any of that. I think that's they don't communicate those kind of things the way they used to. But you got to think that what Pat Burrell's in there going, hey, folks, they're throwing first pitch fastballs right down the middle. Maybe swing at those. You know, isn't that part of his job as a hitting coach? And if he was telling them, they weren't listening.
Right. Or just look for the changeup. Right. Like once he's got strike, once you're down in the count, he's going to throw you the changeup. Right. And it just seemed like none of that was being communicated. Or if it was, they weren't following that plan. And it didn't even seem like an execution thing, because it was just sort of like if they were being told that, they wouldn't be performing the way that they did. I mean, that changeup was just dominating them. I mean, I guess maybe the changeup can be that good.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, I knew the changeup was coming. Like, how do they not know? I'm definitely dumber than them.
Yes, you are, for sure. You know who I miss, though? I miss Wilmer.
I miss Wilmer, too.
And it seems similar to last year at the beginning of the year when we didn't see him, and then I became our best player. And I feel like this is the second year in a row where they can't find a space for him defensively. And so he just sits on the bench, and every time he gets an opportunity, he gets a hit. I mean, he's batting 400 right now in the last week.
Yeah.
And only 10 at bats. So they got to solve this Wilmer problem. And I don't know how you do it. And maybe you sit Soler for a game. I don't know.
Well, it's unfortunate because right now Soler is actually one of our better hitters. And true. So, and Lamont Wade is not hitting well, but he's getting on base, right? So the two obvious spots in the lineup, first base and DH to put Wilmer, are two of your other better hitters right now. So, but it is a major problem, right? Your best hitter from last year is not in the lineup repeatedly, day after day. And when you do get him in the lineup, he performs. And he's doing in pinch hit or spot starts and all that sort of stuff. But it's like he's hitting as half as often as everybody else. And like this lineup is not performing right now. And our second best or possibly best hitter isn't in it. And that is really, really frustrating. And I don't know what the solution to it is. I mean, like they caused this problem by the way that they built this roster. Thank you, Farhan. But they got to find a way to get Wilmer more at bats. Period.
Right. And one of those solutions is maybe Wilmer gets some starts at second base. I know defensively that's not his thing, but Tyro Estrada hasn't been hitting and just seems to be clueless as to, I mean, he did have the game winning hit, I guess, on Friday, but still it's his last at bat yesterday or on Sunday, Ben, when the game was still on the line, it looked awful.
It was awful.
Strike three was literally 2 feet off the plate, and he swung at it.
If you didn't see Tyro's at bat, don't go watch it.
You'll just get mad. You'll just get angry.
Or sad.
Yeah, sad.
I mean,
yeah.
He's the guy who we said should be hitting second. You and I said that. We said that. He should be hitting second instead of Soler. And we're idiots.
Yeah, we are idiots. What do we know?
Because Tyro is really struggling right now. And it's light years different than where he was at the same time last year, right? He was the best guy.
That's true, yeah.
And we really need to see his bat get going. I think of all of the guys on the lineup who aren't performing well, he's the one who I feel like we really need to see improve. But, I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to see Wilmer at second base, man. I
had a really good dive on playing first base. You know, he dove and got the ball and not. I don't know. I just feel like at some point you've got to get some offense in the lineup. And of course, at that point, you're going to have to sacrifice some defense.
Right. Well, a good way to get offense into the lineup would be guys that we thought were going to do well, who could actually start doing well.
Good point. Our boy, Jung-Hoo Lee.
Yeah. And look, we are big Jung-Hoo Lee supporters on Giant Cocktails. We're believers.
Yes.
We're big believers. And he started off great in that first series against the Padres, you know.
And he's still getting on base fairly.
Well, no, he's not.
I mean, I guess going into this series, he was on base at least every game except one. But we keep seeing the same result, right? Weak ground balls to the right side.
Well, he had.
I know he had a hit today, right?
Well, and he had he grounded out to the right side 5 times between Friday and Saturday. He was a ground ball to either the first baseman or the second baseman 5 times on Friday and Saturday. And the good news is today he didn't do that at all. But, you know, like... I mean, you said he's still getting on base. I don't know, Matthew. Like, I'm not going to cut him some slack. Like, I'm going to throw him under the bus. Before today, his average was over the last 7 games. His average is, and that counts not today, Sunday, his average was 130. His on-base percentage was 259. His slugging percentage was 130. His OPS is 390. Like, there's no defending that. Like,
yeah.
That's
no,
the last,
you're right.
You know, I like Jung-Hoo Lee is not playing well right now.
Yeah, there's no sugarcoating it. He's
and
not.
Like, and we need him to play better. And certainly over Friday and Saturday, like it was like, is this the same at bat that I just saw? Like he grounded out when the game that we went to on Saturday, he grounded out to the right side 3 times. You know, it looks like today there was a little bit more of a spread and he didn't ground out to the second baseman or first baseman at all. And he did get a hit and did get on base. So that's great. But we need him to turn things around because he turned in after that first Padres series, he's become a black hole. The one thing that I thought was interesting, though, is that before Friday's game, Jung-Hoo Lee had scored 1 run. And that was when he was getting on base.
Right. That 1 run, though, was the result of his solo home
run. Only solo home run. So out of all the times that he had gotten himself on base, the Giants had driven him in 0 times.
So Friday on the big game-winning hit, Tyro Estrada, where he scored from first, that was the only time another Giant has driven him in.
Right. And then it happened again today. He got driven in today. So like it's not just about Jung-Hoo and how he's performing, but it's also what the Giants are doing when he gets on base. And I think a large part of that, certainly in the opening series against the Padres, was Soler. But then it's just been sort of everybody. And it has been a really, really kind of, I don't know. Since the Dodger series, Matthew, this offense has disappeared. And, well, I mean, I don't know how to, I mean, I don't know. Is that necessarily true? I mean, they scored 4 runs in both of the losses, the last 2 losses against the Dodgers. But it's just, yeah. It's just been very like unclutch.
Yeah. Yeah. And just not enough. Not right. Enough. And you know, particularly in certain spots of the lineup, our right fielder, for example, is 1-for-23 with 5 walks so far this season.
Yeah.
You may have heard of him, right? What's his name again?
His name is Mostyn Slastrzemski.
That's right. Mostyn Slastrzemski. Yes. That's
our
right.
Our right fielder, he's an everyday player. He allegedly can hit both right-handers and left-handers well. He's pretty good defensively. But you know what? He's off to a 1-in-23 start, which is one of the he's one of the 10 worst hitters in baseball for players who qualify for, you know, any of the awards at this point in the season. Like, he is Francisco Lindor-esque right now. And for Giants fans who don't know, you might think, oh, that's pretty good. Go ask a Mets fan how Lindor's season is going. It's not going well, folks. And Mostyn Slastrzemski is just as good as Francisco Lindor. They both suck.
Can you get the Slastrzemski jersey in the team store?
I don't think so. But you know what, Matthew? We got to stand up our own team store and start putting some Aaron Judge and some Slastrzemski jerseys out there. Slastrzemski is not doing well. And it is... here's the thing, Matthew. A lot of people out in the Giants universe, they're not fans of Slastrzemski. You and I, we believe. We're Slastrzemski believers, right? We like Slastrzemski.
Yeah. It's that tried and true.
That's right. It's the tried and true. But he's 1-for-23, right? I mean, he did have half a baby. His half-wife had half a baby.
Yes.
So, you know, he had to leave. Half of him had to leave and come back. No, I mean, yeah, honestly. So the point here is that Austin, before today, before Sunday, I don't know how they did today, but Austin Slater was 0-for-7 and Mike Yastrzemski was 1-for-16. It's not good enough by a long shot. And going back to our point earlier in the show, which was that, you know, the Giants are front loading all of these promotional giveaways to get fans into the park, but they're relying on the team to keep fans coming back. And I just wonder, like, how long it takes before performances like this force them to make a change. Because if this team doesn't perform, the fans are going to go away really quick. And I just wonder how long it takes somebody like before we see a name like Slater or Yastrzemski being DFA'd. And we're not the first to even talk about this. I've seen this out not just on Twitter, but I've seen writers and heard this on podcasts. Like, this is a real discussion. We could be 30 days away from a DFA of Yastrzemski or Slater.
Well, the reason people are talking about it, because they're the ones that are struggling. They're also there's also somebody that's available to come up and take their spot in Luis Matos.
Right.
Right. So if the Giants need a punch in the arm, if they need somebody to come up and create a spark, then those two outfield positions are probably, well, especially since they're struggling the most, are the most logical. And Austin Slater, as good as he's been in his career against left-handers, and he's been exceptionally good, if he's not performing this year, this is the year they're all in. This is the year they spent all this money on free agents. This is the time to put all their chips in. And so they're gonna have to make a move, whether they like to or not. And Luis Matos could be the beneficiary of that.
Right. Because Matos is a right-hander and so is Slater. And I see that as being, yeah. I mean, it could be that the longest tenured Giant could be DFA'd in the next 60 days or less. right?
I think less. I don't think they're going to let go 60 days.
Yeah, no,
maybe
they're not.
30 right. at the most.
You're right. And I think he's the guy that's sitting there knocking on the door. And I feel like it really comes down to wins and losses more so than it comes down to offensive performance.
Totally. Right? If the team's winning, then you kind of can forgive some of these struggles.
Right. And like we said, we don't need a lot of offense, but we do need some. And, you know, there's just not a lot of bullets to pull, but Matos is the most obvious one, right? There's not a lot of triggers to pull, bullets to fire. But right. Matos there is the most obvious one. And then after that, it's like Luciano and Nick Ahmed is holding his own. You know, he's not great offensively.
Well, yeah, and defensively, the metrics say he's doing great, but the eye test and his throws make me a little nervous.
He's all over the place. That's because Lamont Wade Jr. keeps saving him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's making all those tags, right? So, yeah, I mean, I at the end of the day, like, we should not expect a lot out of this lineup. And you and I, we didn't talk about this lineup a lot during the preseason. We didn't.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there was an assumption that, oh, we made all these changes, so it's obviously going to be better. But like, and I think that's sort of true, but like, I don't think you look at this lineup and think it's great.
Well, no. And you brought up a good point. You said that this team still doesn't have an identity offensively. And I think that's a problem. I think that they don't know, you know, we've known in teams past, 2021, it was, you know, look for your pitch and hit it no matter what the count, right? You just go up there and you're aggressive and you hit your pitch. You don't swing anything outside of the strike zone, but you look for your pitch. There was an identity there. And nowadays, what is our identity? You know, we don't steal bases. We don't hit home runs. We don't hit singles. I don't know what our identity is, and I think they have to figure that out.
I agree, because right now the identity seems to be each man is an island and he just does his thing, right?
Right.
Lee slaps the ball around and gets on base. You know, Wade gets a walk and works the walk and occasionally hits a home run. Soler strikes out or hits an absolute bomb. You know, Conforto, I don't know. Like, he goes and gets that bag. Go get that bag, Michael. Chapman hits a home run or does absolutely nothing. And then after that, it's like, oh, Bailey gets some hits. And then you get to the last four guys in the lineup, and it's just like nobody does anything. Except Nick Ahmed occasionally drops down a bunt. And that's the identity right now.
Yeah.
Right? And that's gross. That's gross. It's stupid. Yeah. It's nothing. It looks like...
It's okay if your team is built on pitching and defense and you're actually pitching and you're actually defending. And right now the pitching isn't really at its peak either. And we know that that's a work in progress. We're still waiting for Snell to start, who's on Monday, and Cobb to come back. And maybe that will help, you know, the bullpen, and we won't have guys like Nick Avila and Kaiwei Tang and, you know, all of that. But so maybe we could be a little patient, but at some point, the identity of this team has to come forward, and they've got to play like they know what they're doing.
I agree. Right. I agree that right now the pitching is 25th best in baseball. I don't think that's where it'll end up.
No, it better not. Otherwise, it could be a long year.
Right. The defense has been average. It's slightly below average, but I think that will pick up. But we need something from this offense.
This episode is running long because Ben can't shut up.
What are you talking about?
I'm telling it like it is, man.
Whatever, dude.
All right. Well, maybe we should get to the trivia question because it is running up. Bob's right. It is running up on the hour here.
Do it.
So what was today's trivia question? It was, in 2012, the Giants were third in the NL on stolen bases with 118. Five players had double-digit steals. Name as many as you can, Ben.
I think I said Sleepy and Sneezy and Dopey and Flatulence. Yeah, I don't know. But I did say Buster Posey. No, I said, I don't remember who I said. Oh, I said Brandon Crawford.
That's right, you did. Okay, well, so the top five in stolen bases were Angel Pagan with 29.
Nice.
Gregor Blanco with 26.
Yes.
Ryan Terrio with 13.
Oh, yeah. He was on the
remember
team.
Him? Melky Cabrera with 13.
Wow, not bad for half a season.
That's right. Not bad for half a season, and or slightly more than half a season, I guess. But the part that really interested me, and the reason this is a trivia question answer, is because Brandon Belt was number five on the team with 12 stolen bases.
Chose the wrong Brandon.
But Brandon Belt, man, stealing bases. What a thought. As it turns out, stolen bases don't necessarily correlate into World Series wins, because then 2 years later, the Giants had half as many stolen bases as they did in 2012. So, but still, we have zero, and we're on pace for zero. So that doesn't bode well. No team that has stolen zero bases has won the World Series.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we got to steal at least one.
At least one. All right. Well, looking ahead, Ben, we got the Nationals on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And most importantly, the debut of Blake Snell.
Right. This is going to solve all our problems.
It will. And I think this, I mean, the pitching matchup is pretty impressive. You got Blake Snell, Kyle Harrison, and Hicks all lined up. I'm excited. I think that this gives us a good chance to come in against a struggling Nationals team and do some damage.
We better sweep them.
Yeah.
Anything less than a sweep is unacceptable. I'm just trying to fire the team up, dude. I'm just trying to come on now.
So, folks, it's another episode in the books here. Don't forget to follow us on the socials at Giant Cocktails on the platform formerly known as Twitter, and on Instagram and Threads and Mastodon. Don't forget to subscribe, if you haven't done so already, to the podcast listener of your choice. Now on YouTube, you could hit that little bell and subscribe on YouTube and get us there. Also, you know, give us some good ratings. That would be really nice. If you have anything positive to say, go on to, you know, Spotify or Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps the show. All right. Having said all that, Ben, it was good talking with you. We will see you again on Thursday when we break down the National Series and hopefully talk about all the offense the Giants scored over the last three games. Until then, Ben, it's been good chatting with you. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers, Matthew. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Giant Cocktails Podcast. Until next time, bottoms up.
Goodbye.
Adios, muchachos y muchachas. I really like my Blake Sable hat.
Yeah?
I'm going to wear it to bed.
That's good. You're going to wear it to bed?
I don't care if it's all messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care if it's all messy. I just,
yeah, you know, confession, I sneezed on that. That's...
Oh, that's what that
that's
is.
That's what... Yeah, it's not...